So hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Big Blurred Cast. I'm your host today, Hank Bird. We got a great show coming up tonight. I'm going to have a special guest here in a little bit. And but yeah, we thank you guys for tuning in again. And just a quick update on stuff that I'm working on. We are still going to have the screening for my web series, Blurred. That's going to be happening on August the 29th. We're going to be over at Circle Cinema at 10 South Lewis in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's going to be from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. So we're going to have a red carpet, you know, shindig. Everybody's going to be dressed up and suited and booted and all that good stuff. We're going to be taking pictures, followed by an introduction. We're going to have a quick viewing of the pilot episode, and then we are going to go into having a Q&A. Afterwards, we're going to boogie over to Retro Bar and Grill over at 800 North Peoria Avenue with Marv and the rest of the crew over at Retro Grill and Bar. And we're going to have a great time, drinks, music, and all that good stuff. For more information, you can check out my website, blurredswebseries.com, where we have information about the show. And we also have a soundtrack available with all Tulsa local artists. And check it out, blurredswebseries.com. So I got a bone to pick with some of you guys, man. So a lot of my friends who are, you know, have a little bit more money than me, and they, you know, they're doing a little bit better than me. They're able to afford, you know, these new console gaming systems. So, you know, they got the PS4 and the Xbox One and all this good stuff. And they got the 4K systems and all that great stuff. Hey, but some of us still like to hold on for nostalgia. Some of our old systems. So, you know, don't despise our humble beginnings. You know, some of us are still out here rocking with the Wii, the GameCube, the Super NES, the, you know, the old school PlayStations, the Sega Genesis. And me, I still got my old school Xbox 360. So y'all can clown, but, you know, the games and the consoles are a mad cheap. I went to a GameStop yesterday, and like three games that would have normally cost me probably about $150, I got for like $30. So I was able to get like Battlefield Hardline, Mass Effect 3, and Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. So y'all can clown, but you know, we can get the games a little bit cheaper, you know, than anybody else. So anyway, into our special guest tonight. I have a great guest tonight. She's a comic book writer, a content creator. And speaking of comic books, you know, just a little backstory about comic books. The comic book industry today brings in around $1.3 billion. And about 60% of that goes to the big two, which are Marvel and DC Comics. So that leaves just a sliver of content creators of color who are opting to not work for the big two and to go out and do their own thing independently. And so that brings me, you know, to our guest. My guest tonight, she is her name is Charlene R. Jones. She's a Kansas City-based writer. Charlene graduated from Washington High School in Kansas City, Kansas. She later received her BS from Kansas State University, my alma mater, and her MA from the University of Phoenix, her MS from Emporia State University, and her MFA from the Savannah College of Arts and Design. Her comic book Black Star is the first of many projects that she'll be launched under Charlene's publication company Sugarlene Publication LLC. And Black Star is also the 2019 Glyph Award winner in the category of Best Female Artist. So without further ado, Big Blurred Cast folks, I would love to introduce my alma mater mate from Kansas State University, Charlene Jones.
Charlene. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm doing just fine. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm great after that introduction. That's an introduction, baby. You rolled out the verbal red carpet for me.
Right, you know?
Golly, thank you.
No problem. We are so glad to have you. We finally got a chance to connect. We finally got a chance to get you on the show.
Right.
I'm always interested in talking to content creators, especially comic book writers. Me being a big comic book head from way back, I'm definitely interested in talking to folks like you. So tell us more about Black Star. What is Black Star?
Sure. Man, first of all, I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me. And like you said, I'm so glad that we could connect. Black Star was actually my thesis for my MFA. And when I had anybody who's went to graduate school, you have to write your thesis, you have to defend your thesis, and so on and so on and so on. So I had initially made it a cowboy western, actually, about the black township of Quindaro. And when I went to present it to the to my thesis committee, they were like, oh, we don't know, we're not really feeling this, yada 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 yada, but we're gonna go ahead and disapprove you because really we know that you're a strong writer and whatever you do is gonna be good. So I got to researching various, you know, things about black cowboys, this. I know a lot coming from Kansas City, Kansas. I know a lot. I know about the Quindaro Township, you know, I played there as a child, lived right up the street from it as a child. So I really still wasn't finding enough information to really sink my teeth in. So I just so happened to be, I don't know what I was looking at. And I said, I wish I could make a comic book. That's what I wish I could really do. And then I thought to myself, well, why couldn't I make a comic book? My mind just switched that quick. It was just clicking. And so I said, if I made a comic book, what would it be about? So I saw that you have to have a theme for your thesis, you know. So I said, right. First I thought the lack of black women in romantic comedies. I scratched that down. The lack of black women in Western, scratched that down. Then I said the lack of black women in comic books. Mm. And I pulled up a plethora of information. And it was even a sister who even wrote a book about it. And I wish I had her name. If I had my paper in front of me, I could cite her source. And she even wrote a whole book about it. And I said, this is going to be my Bible right here. So I used that part for the academic part of it. So the second part of my dramatic writing MFA degree was, then you had to write a script. You had your academic paper, and then you actually had to write a script, make the characters, yada yada yada, go through the motions. You know how it goes. So I said, okay, this is going to be about a black woman. I don't know what I'm going to do with this sister, but she's going to be tough. I'm going to make her powers unique. I'm going to make her unique, and we're going to see where this goes. So it was just a two or three week. Binge, you know, like me just creating and just throwing out ideas and writing things on the wall and saying, okay. And when I finally got done with all of that, you know, just late nights, just throwing out the ideas, pitching it to myself and just trying to work through it, I said, she's a black woman. She lives in Brooklyn. She's a scientist. She gets infected in a lab accident, and it's going to be this whole world. And that's how I came up with it. And I said, you know, I said, I want to make these characters actually off of people that I know. So I made the character based on my sister, who is Michelle Lee Jones, but people know her as Sugar. If you went to K-State, you know Sugar.
Yes.
And yo, Sarah.
That's my Sarah.
And I said, I'm going to base it off loosely off of her. And then I'm going to go from there because, you know, Hank, I didn't want her to be just some everyday person on the street. I wanted people to see that black women do have professions. We can be doctors, we can be lawyers, we can be architects. And I made this sister a doctor. So she's the head of this lab, and her cohort is the head of research and development. He's the one who gets infected, and it goes from there. And actually, this Black Star is a very, very small part of a bigger world that I'm building. I just haven't got it out there in comic book form yet. So it's a piece of a very big puzzle that's coming down the line. But that's how I got it started. It started as my MFA thesis, and I knew I had really hit gold with it when I presented it to my thesis chair, and the same thesis chair who thought that my writing, you know, about the lack of really wasn't going anywhere and they really didn't get it. This is Charlene. This is going to go somewhere.
Wow.
This is going to go somewhere. I said, are you kidding me? This is going to go somewhere. We don't know how it's when, but it's going to go somewhere. And I said, okay. Yeah. So it started off as a script. You know, a 60, 75 page script, what have you. And that's how it came to be. Now, how it became a comic book is a whole different.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that next. I was like, how did all of this become a comic book?
Well, and you know what? So we're both content creators. And, you know, to create content, you have to have the money, or you have to have somebody backing you that has the money. And everything that I've done to this second has been for me crowdfunding, getting my friends from film school and from sets that I've worked with in the past in New York or Atlanta, wherever we are, and said, hey, let's do this project. We get it together, and that's that. So when I pitched a script of Black Star to him, they said, God, this is dope. Charlene, this is dope. But who gonna shoot this? How are we gonna shoot this? You know, I mean, we can get, you know, we can get a lot of it done, but when it comes to the CG part of it, and you know, how are we gonna do this? It's gonna take a lot of money. So as I was graduating and I was leaving Savannah, Georgia, and you know, I still really hadn't had a job. And I'm just gonna be real, because people sit up there and say, well, I went to film school and Steven Spielberg hired me and the rest is history. That ain't how it works for everybody. Okay.
That's not how it works. Not even close.
Not even close. Because you finish, hey, you could be at the top of your class in field school and one of the best writers in the program, and you still moving back home with your mama like I had to do. Let's be real about
Trust
it.
Trust me. Trust me. I got a friend that went through that. She went to film school, UCLA, graduated, went and got a master's.
Yeah.
She was sleeping in her car for a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, before she landed a job. So
the struggle is real.
Everybody don't have that story. So,
the struggle is real, baby. So I said, okay, I was here and I had my script, and so I just happened to go out to New York City that summer and visit, and I have a friend that a person I know who works at Little Brown Publishing. I said, this will be my way in. I can talk to her and she'll help me, and oh, this is going to be great. And so I talked to her and she said, well, I can't really help you even though I work there. Her husband's like, why can't you help her? You know, you can tell she was scared. You ever known somebody to be in a position and they're scared to use it? There you go. And she says, you know, I can hook you up with a really good artist or myself. Who needs that? I need to be let in the door. So I didn't let that deplete me, but it kind of depleted me. So I said to myself, Charlene, you have just wasted XDXX thousands on a, you know, education. You can look this up yourself, network with people, talk with people, use social media for what it is to connect with people who are doing what you want to do. Do the research, put the work in, and you can make this happen. And Hank, be honest with you, that's just what I did. I got on Facebook, anything that said comic book maker, comic book creator, comic book reader, I signed up. Hey, friend me. Overnight, I had changed my circle from people who were just talking about high school crap and all this. Let me get you off my page. You don't help me with nothing. To people who were in the business and doing what I wanted to do. So
that's a great thing that you're saying right there. Mm-hmm. And because I say that to people who want to do film and people who want to do comic books and things like that, because I want to do a graphic novel as well.
Yeah.
And I did just the very same thing. I've read a lot of comics, but I didn't have a whole lot of knowledge about how do I start one, what, you know, what are the steps in doing that? How do you put together a script for a comic? You know,
that's it.
Looking
that's
for writers, it. You know, being a writer myself, trying to find, you know, somebody to pencil it and ink it and
that's
color
it.
And all that stuff. And, and it's funny that people let themselves be defeated by what they don't have.
Right.
And not knowing that you have information at your fingertips that
that's right.
You do this. And it's amazing. You did just the very thing that I tell people all the time. Whatever you don't know how to do, go look it up.
And I'm going to tell you something. I had to, you know, that's one thing about it. You know, we're from the old school where you go to the library. I said, hey, now it's easier. It's right here at my fingertips. Let me look this up. Let me utilize YouTube. Let me utilize Vimeo. Right. Let me utilize. I wasn't even on Instagram like that or Twitter like that or anything. I started reaching out. And that's one thing that I would say about the comic book community compared to the film community. These brothers and sisters are a lot more open to texting you back information or instant messaging you back information. And hey,
and I was going to ask you that. Have you met other Black comic book creators, especially women comic book creators, and what's that experience been like?
So let's talk. So let me finish this part, and then we're going to go into that because it's going to shock you, but I'm probably going to say. So I started doing the research and whatnot, I said, you know what? I said, let me get on YouTube and see even how the script has to be formatted. How about that? Mm-hmm. Let's start there. Mm-hmm. So social search, found a guy who was kind of to my liking. So I started using that format. Bam. That's one obstacle down. Then I says, well, let me try to find an artist. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm having difficulty finding an artist. Nobody really wants to work, or they're really not answering me. I'm having difficulty. Let me use that phone number that such and such gave me, the artist that she said from Little Brown Publishing. Okay. Called this brother Corey Thomas up. He had done a Schoolyard Superhero with James Patterson. He had done some things for Marvel, some things for some other comic book houses. He said, yeah, he said, send me the script. He said, and I'll let you know if it's something that I can get into. I said, okay. He said, I'll get back with you in about three or four days. Okay. I didn't think anything of it. Later on that evening, I get a call. Hey, this is Corey. I said, oh, hey, what's up? He said, I read it. I said, I thought you said you would call me 3 or 4 days. He said, oh, no. He said, it's cool. He said, this is dope. He said, so he said, let's move forward.
Wow.
So I kind of got spoiled with Corey because Corey was a one-stop shop. Corey does the inking. Corey does the color. He does everything. He does the lettering. Wow. He does everything. And I pay him what I pay him because he does have the experience, but then you see the product too.
Mm-hmm.
Then you see what it looks like too. And I said, he made my vision come to life.
Yes, he did.
So he made my vision. And you know, it's very important when you're working with somebody that you communicate effectively, communicate openly. If you feel that something's not working, or this artist is not a good fit for you, just say that we're not a good fit and move on. It's no hard feelings. They're not going to be mad. You're not going to be mad. So when I got everything done, sent it to the printer. I used this brother named Jason Reeves. I used his printing company, 133 Art, I think is what it's called, and just started going to the shows. And since then, like I said, I've started two other comic books, and I'm the artist in Argentina, and I'm working with one in Italy, and it's the same process. I use Facebook. I use Instagram. Hey, this is my ad. This is what I'm offering. This is the project that I'm working on. And I'm very blunt, Hank. If you're not used to drawing African American characters, if you're not used to African American skin tones, I really can't use you. I don't have time to explain to you what a red bone is, what light skin is, dark skin is, what chocolate. Come on now, you got to work with me.
Right.
So that has been my process. And to be honest with you, it's expensive because don't think that you're going to sit up there and get somebody for $10 a page. Some of these people, they've worked for Marvel. They've worked for DC. They've worked for Dark Horse. They've been independent. They work for advertising agencies. Their skills are second to none. And sometimes you can pay up to $250 a page. You can pay
$100. I was getting ready to ask you that.
You can pay $100 a page. You can pay $75 a page.
What's a ballpark figure for a whole comic book, you think?
So Black Star costs me. Look at this. Look at this. Here I go. I can get my calculator out right now.
Oh, man.
Because I can tell you right now, I had to borrow money.
Okay.
So Black Star costs me, just for getting it drawn and done, about $6,500. $7,000.
Yeah.
When I got my first printing done, that was like an additional, I think, $450. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so it came to about $7,500 altogether. So when you think about it as an independent artist, you know, you got this product. Now you got your books sitting out there in the garage now. You're ready to go. I did North Texas Comic Show last year. I did Onyx Con last year. I missed WinCon Con. And that was that. So I was just trying to get my legs to feel what the comic book convention things were like. So I'm already signed up for the Albuquerque comic show, North Texas again. I'm trying to get into Planet Con for next March. I'm trying to get into Emerald City Con for next March. So I have more shows planned for next year.
You say Albuquerque?
I'll be in Albuquerque in January for their comic show.
Oh, you know, I know the guy that runs that.
No, you don't.
Jim Burleson?
Oh, wow.
Yes, I do. Jim Burleson is a really good friend of mine. Jim and I did work together. We've been working together for a couple of years. Jim is one of the guys that got me started on doing paid script gigs.
Wow.
Jim paid me some pretty good money, and you know, to work on some script gigs a few years back. And,
wow. You
know, he runs the Santa Fe Comic Con and he runs the Albuquerque Comic Con.
Yeah.
So, So I'll drop a dime for you. You know what I'm saying?
Please do.
He's a good dude. He loves content creators. So he's a really good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, when I won the Glyph Award this year, I kind of made my rounds around the the show there, you know, and I kind of handed out free comics that day. He was like, oh, well, thank you. This is free. Well, you know, I didn't charge that day, but that's how much it cost me. And that was a journey. That was the journey that it took. And like I said, I had to borrow money from my mom, my sister. I'll pay it back. I promise. You know, but if I hadn't had them helping me out, let's just be 100 about it. We still be talking about a project that I'm going to be finishing. And now that I'm working with two other, now sometimes you can get, you know, international artists for a little bit less, $100, $75, whatever. Because you gotta realize if they're coming from someplace like South America, or they're coming from Canada, okay, our dollar is stronger there. So they don't mind taking that lower rate like that. And you also have to know you have a lot of these guys that they're not just working with you, they're working with like 10 other people. So they getting your money and not other people's money. So they don't mind taking a little hit, you know. So you kind of haggle. But I think when you start getting with people that are under that $100 range, you might start losing a little quality, you know. So I kind of try to keep it in that $100, $75 to $100 a page. And you know what I'm saying? It's not bad. And like I said, then it's something that you can sell on your website, which is what I'm doing. And it's something that you can sell when you go to the conventions, which is what I'm doing. And you're going to get that money back eventually.
And that was my next question. I was going to ask you, what are your plans for Black Star now that you got the first season done? What are your plans?
Man, I want to see this on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime. You know, I really don't, you know, I want to see this on the small screen, big screen too, if I can get it, you know. But I mean, this is where I want this to go. And I'm a firm believer in build it and they will come. It's all about the numbers. Mm-hmm. If they sit up there and see that you sold so many thousands of copies with no advertisement, no marketing, no money behind, like people just coming because your stuff is so dope, somebody's gonna say, hey, let's take a meeting. And I'm just waiting for that person. I'm waiting for the Erica Alexanders. You know, she's so close to looking for comic book content.
Yes, she is.
I'm waiting to run across her path and so I can put this in her hand.
And but for a lot of people that don't know, the Erica Alexander was on Living Single.
Yes,
and
she played
Max on Living Single. Yes. And she's a nerd just like us, and she is very, very into genre. She's very into horror, sci-fi, comic books. Very much. Yes, she is. I would love to have her on the show one day.
Yes.
My next question was going to be, so what, as a Black woman, what do you want to see more of in the comic book industry?
You know, I think that's one thing that people like about my character. She's not shooting electricity. We have so many Black superheroes that shoot electricity.
Yeah.
You know, we got Static Shock. We got Black Lightning. We got
Storm.
We got a lot of brothers and sisters shooting us electricity, but you know, we can do so much more, you know, and it's good to see those original Black characters coming to life. You know, we have some people who are really putting together some, you know, just like they rebooted Brother Man Comics. Brother Man came back out with the new thing last year. And I got to meet those guys. I can't call their names right off the top because one of their names is really kind of difficult to pronounce. But I mean, I love the story. I loved it. And I would like to see something like that come to a screen. You know, we have original Black comics that we can make into TV shows or films right now. They're ready to shoot. And I would like to see that. I mean, I would still like to see Static Shock come to fruition. I've been waiting for Static Shock to hit the screen, and it hasn't got there yet.
The last time I heard that Reggie Hudlin was pinning the script. And I don't know what happened after that. I haven't heard it. I would love to see that. I would love to see Icon and all the Black characters, you know, Blue Marvel. And Blue Marvel, Kevin Griffiths, he wrote Blue Marvel. Another friend of mine, I met at the Santa Fe Comic Con.
That's it. Yeah. Guy Sims, Brian McGee, and Dawood Aniyabwile. I should be able to say his name by now. I've met him.
Yeah, Brother Man Comics.
Brother Man. Yeah. And why have we not seen this come to the screen, to the small screen, big screen, wherever we're going to put it? So I would like to see more of that. I would like to see more Black women put into very positive roles. I mean, DC has put Vixen on the shelf, and has done nothing with her. Yeah, you had Halle Berry's Catwoman. That was fine. But Vixen, I think Vixen would have been a better fit for her. And maybe even a better story. You know, but that's just me. That's just me. My word is not gospel. I just think about these things sometimes.
I would like to see Nubia. Everybody doesn't know that Wonder Woman has a black sister.
She has a black sister named Nubia. I mean, and if DC is smart, they'll bring her in sooner than later. They really will.
Yes.
They'll bring her in sooner than later.
Yes.
Because I'm like, go ahead, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm listening. Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna ask, where can folks find your comic book?
It's on my website, www.sugarlenepubs.com. They can always email me at sugarlenepubs@gmail.com. That is S as in Sam, H as in Harry, U, G as in Gary, A as in Apple, L as in Low, E as in Elephant, N as in No, E as in Elephant, P as in Paul, U, B as in Baby, S as in Sam.com and at gmail.com. And I had people just PayPal me $10 and I just mail it to them.
Wow.
You know, however you want me to get it to you. If you don't feel comfortable going to the website, or if the website's acting hinky as it has been here in the last few days because of the weather, just PayPal me and I'll get it right to you. It's no big deal.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
I'm available. You had asked a question. Go ahead.
What are you working on next?
Well, you had asked a question first, though. What has been my experience with working with other women? Did you ask me that? Okay.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. So, I got two experiences here. It is what it is. I'm about to just have a Monique moment. So, when I went out to Philly, I knew I had gotten nominated for two awards with the Glyph Awards. I got nominated for Rising Star and I got nominated for Best Female Character.
Now explain what the Glyph Awards are for people that don't know.
So the Glyph Awards are given through, and I'm going to look this up right now so I can make sure that I can say it all right, because I don't like saying things that aren't right. Glyph Award, Glyph Comic Awards, bam. Yes, and it's even got a Wikipedia about it. Hey, so the Glyph Comics Awards recognizes the best comics made by, for, and about people of color. Okay, it's in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's hosted by the East Coast Black Age of Comics Convention. So it's called the ECBACC. I can never get all them letters. That's why I looked it up, because I was like, if you see their initials, it's going to say ECBACC, and it has a really cool character. That's their logo. And am I over here for 2019? No, they don't have her 2019 yet, but it's just 2016. But I have some very good company. I have some very good company, and so it's given by these guys. It's out in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's in conjunction with the actual comic convention, which is held on Temple University's campus. Mm-hmm. And so when I had found out that I had got nominated for those two awards, I was like, whoa, you know, oh man, this is something. So I scraped my money together and I, you know, flew on out there. And so I was greeted by one of the brothers who runs it. Jamar Nichols, who helps out with it, who's done Leon Protected the Playground. He's won numerous awards for that. Mm-hmm. And I forget the brother who is one of the main founders on the board of it. I'm losing my name for now, and I apologize for that. But they greeted me, hey, Charlene, welcome. You know, we're glad you're here, yada, yada, yada. I said, okay, yeah, great, okay. Yeah. I want you to meet this sister here, and she does this, and she's in this. The girl barely spoke to me. I had my hand, hey, how are you? Walked right past me. And they kind of looked like, what was that about? You know, didn't say anything. So when it came to, I didn't get the Rising Star, but when it came to the female character category, she actually announced my name and announced that I won. So once again, this brother who's over it, he kept saying, I'm about to call his name here in a second, because he's on the far right of this picture. I can't get his name though. But anyway, he said, I want you to meet Shakar Davis. Shakar mm-hmm. Davis. He kept saying, Charlene, such such, I want you all to know each other. We're going to meet. She half shook my hand and walked off. And wow. I said, okay.
Wow.
Now, we're supposed to be black women now. We're supposed to be helping each other. We're supposed to be, okay. Then there was another sister there, and she's done a lot of things. She's talked on a lot of panels, and he mm-hmm. did the same thing with her before I won the award. And she barely spoke. Now, after she saw that I won, she was more cordial. Now, you see how sad that is? So it takes me to win an award for you to have some type of civility towards me? Okay. All right. So that is one experience there.
Oh, wow.
And
that's,
you know what?
Crazy.
It's crazy, but it's realistic. It really, really is realistic. And I don't put any weight to it. Because for every one person that acts like that, I need 10 sisters who are twice as positive. So I don't really give that any weight, because to me that's God showing me how you really are. So when I do make it, I know not to deal with you, and that's fine with me. It really is. But it's still kind of disappointing that when you meet somebody who's in the industry and who can say, hey, mm-hmm. welcome, and give you a leg up, that's how they act towards you.
What do you think that's about? What do you think that's what that is? What do you think that's all about? I'll be honest.
You know what? It's not about me. It's about how you feel about yourself.
Ooh, okay.
And maybe something in me threatens you and makes you feel less about yourself. I really don't know. I really don't know. And I really don't have time to care about it. You know, you can work on that in your free time. But, you know I ain't done nothing to you. So I really can't take that on myself, and I can't.
No.
You know, it didn't cross my mind. And after I had my certificates in my hand and was taking pictures and shaking hands, I didn't think no more about it.
Right.
The next thing at the convention, when people come to me and congratulating me, hey, I didn't think anything else about it, you know? Right. So it is what it is. But it's sad to say that I'm used to that. It's sad to say mm-hmm. that I was expecting that. You know, that's what's sad mm-hmm. to me. Right. That's what's sad to me. You know, and I hope that when I meet other sisters, brothers, whoever, anybody who asks me for help or if this, I try to help.
Right.
I don't want anybody saying that about me. That's all right. That's the only thing I can change. That's the only thing I can control. So that's my, and I have several other instances, but I'm not going to go into them right now, but that's my most recent one, you know.
Wow. Well. That segues us into the portion of the show that we like to call Ear to the Streets.
Okay.
And, we're going to talk about a couple of things. First being, I mean, if you've been living under a rock, everybody's heard about the controversy about the casting of Miss Haley as the Little Mermaid for Walt Disney. They're doing an upcoming remake. Well, not a remake, but a live action
version.
Cast as Ariel in the Little Mermaid. Now, people don't know who Halle Berry is. She's not a newcomer. She's actually a very trained actress. She's on Grown-ish as a Sky Forster. She was on Disney Channel's Austin and Ally. She was in Tyler Perry's House of Pain.
Yeah.
And she was in the 2006 Queen Latifah film Last Holiday. Mm-hmm. But most famously, she's known to be part of a duo with her sister. Chloe and Halle, signed to Beyonce's label, Parkwood Entertainment. Mm-hmm. So after the casting, there was a lot of controversy. People were, you know, not my Ariel, and, you know, and hashtags and, you know, polls were being taken, and people, you know, I think for the most part, most people were, you know, okay with it, but you had a lot of people who were not.
Right.
And I'm going to ask you now, this is a mermaid. This is a fish person. Mm-hmm. This isn't, we're not talking about the Queen of Elizabeth. We're not talking about a real person that existed. Mm-hmm. We're not culturally appropriating mermaids, because mermaids aren't real people.
Right.
So, what do you think that's about? What is all this hubbub about, you know, Miss Haley?
Once again, I think it talks about a lot about to the vile that people have towards you, for whatever reason that they have. And then if you're a person of color not liking it, maybe it's because you don't reach the goals that you want for yourself. Mm-hmm. This girl is out here living her best life. She's setting goals and high marks for herself, and baby, she's hitting them. Mm-hmm. You know, so you got to look at yourself. Now, my thing is this. We sat here and watched Elizabeth Taylor be the queen of Egypt. We sat here and watched actresses in the 30s when they did The Good Earth. They were playing Chinese women, had little Chinese eyes drawn on like that, disrespecting Asian folk. We've had them sit that Ghost in the Shell. How does Scarlett Johansson look like a Japanese anime person to you? She does not.
Right.
She does not. And the biggest smack in my face, the biggest smack in my face, is when you made the Grandmaster and Doctor Strange Tilda Swinton's ass. Excuse my language.
Right.
That is a British white woman. How does an old Asian monk turn into a British white woman? I'm getting, my voice getting high. Because can't nobody tell me nothing about Doctor Strange. I love me some doggone Doctor Strange for way back. You know,
right.
And when I saw that,
yeah.
I was like, what the freak?
Yeah.
Who did this?
Yeah.
So you sit up there and you can't even count between five or six sets of hands how many times Hollywood whitewashes something. You cannot. You know that character is supposed to be a black woman, a Latino woman, an Indian woman, and they got Angelina Jolie playing.
Right.
Am I right?
It's funny. It's like a double standard. It's like a double standard.
It is.
It's like y'all can do it.
That's it.
But when it's done to you,
you can't stand
it. And it really wasn't done to you because, again, this is a mermaid.
It's not even a person. It's a doggone fish. It's based off of a freaking cartoon.
Right.
It's based off of a cartoon, and you didn't mind culturally appropriating that little doggone lobster. He was Jamaican. A little yellow Jamaican. What the heck?
Jamaican lobster. Right.
Right. So you see what I'm saying? So I've heard her and her sister sing. They can sing their tails off.
Yes.
I thought they got gypped at that Grammy Award when they didn't win. And because to me, it's not really about if you're talented anymore. It's who's their big genius, literally and figuratively. Because they should have won that doggone award. I can't wait to see her. I still got to go see Will Smith in Aladdin. I haven't seen that yet. I'm definitely going to catch Lion King. And I'm going to be catching her when she comes out. I have no issue with her playing a fictional character. Now, did anybody say anything when that guy dressed in half blackface played Michael Jackson? Well, towards the end, he was a white man anyway. Are you out of your daggone mind?
Ray Fiennes,
Have you ever heard Michael Jackson talk? Michael Jackson was a black man. Did you hear me?
And Michael Jackson specifically said, if anybody plays him in a movie, he doesn't want it to be a white person.
He specifically said that. Did you hear me? Michael Jackson would tell you, I'm a black man. I'm a proud black man. He would tell you that in a second. Michael, we're playing with you now.
Nah.
Don't let this wig and this white powder fool you.
Michael was a very shrewd businessman.
Yeah.
Black.
That's it. So you see how many times they have done this and done this and done this. And then when you sit up there and you have take a little something from them, oh my goodness. I mean, they lose their stuff, do they not? And I think you and I were talking about when they cast Zoe Saldana to play Nina Simone.
Nina Simone, oh my God.
You know, how do you think it's okay to put on blackface and a fake nose?
Right.
That's the kind of stuff they do.
And fake teeth.
That's the kind of stuff they do. Instead of you getting India Irie to play that part.
Ooh, she'd have been perfect.
Perfect. So they have been miscasting and whitewashing since Hollywood began.
Right.
Okay. So I really am not here for your. They were saying I clicked off their crap. You know, I don't get on Facebook to talk to folk no way.
Right.
I really don't. Because you don't know me. I don't know you, man.
Right.
Okay, so I'm not into that. I will be supporting it. I'll be paying my little blanket bank dollars to see it, and I can't wait to see it. I really can't.
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
Yeah. So my next subject is talking about my man Percy. Master P. And,
Yeah.
I mean, no. I'm
because I made a comment on your page about that.
I don't really, you know, hate Matt P for saying what he said.
Let's get into it.
What he's talking about.
Let's get into it.
He says, now, Master P, people don't know, he did an interview with the Breakfast Club. And it's not the first time P's had some controversy over things that he said. Right. He said some things about Tyler Perry. He says, and when he did the interview with Breakfast Club, he said, you got to realize why it's important. P said,
right.
When we do a project like Black Panther, mm-hmm. we didn't benefit off that, man. Like, mm-hmm. Black people was in the movie and we were happy and excited, but it wasn't us.
Right.
So Master P then went on to explain how his upcoming film, I Got the Hook Up Too, is the start of Black people controlling what they create. Mm-hmm. Now, let me preface this by saying, I have the utmost respect for P, man. I understand everything that he did coming from, you know, the projects in New Orleans. He went out to mm-hmm. Richmond, California. He started mm-hmm. his own thing. He had a record store. He put mm-hmm. his music out independently, made millions of dollars. He started his own film production company where he did the first I Got the Hook Up and other films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, you know, call them hood classics, or they were hood films, or whatever mm-hmm. you want to call them. But I understand fully what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me says that, okay, honest P, I understand what you're saying. Black Panther was a big movie, had a lot of Black people in it, but mm-hmm. it didn't belong to Black people.
Mm-hmm.
I agree, and we got to agree to disagree on that, Percy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because while, no, the film didn't belong to Black people, and it wasn't an independent Black production, it did employ hundreds of Black people
mm-hmm.
who went on to win awards, and
mm-hmm.
by winning those awards, their asking price went up. You know, mm-hmm. the young lady who did the production design, the costumes, those two ladies, now when they do future films, they can open doors for other Black women.
Mm-hmm.
Their asking price definitely has gone up. They can ask for more money. They can make those money. The other people that were involved in the film, even the cast, Chadwick Boseman, he was already a star. Now he's a bigger star. You know, mm-hmm. Winston Duke, all the people that were in the film are bigger stars now because of it. They can ask for more money and they can open doors for more people. So
mm-hmm.
I agree with what P is saying. This was a Disney film. It was a Hollywood blockbuster. And it, mm-hmm. yeah, the money didn't come back to the hood directly.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is that the people involved in the film thereby have benefited.
Mm-hmm.
And can benefit their communities and benefit Hollywood and benefit other Black actors and actresses and writers and directors and et cetera through mm-hmm. their experience with Black Panther. So that's mm-hmm. So I understand what P was saying. I get what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people said, you know, he was hating and all that stuff. I don't believe that. You know, and people got to understand P is releasing a movie. He's putting out I Got the Hook Up Too. So part mm-hmm. of this was shameless promotion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, because he went on to say that, of course, you know, I Got the Hook Up Too is going to be the biggest movie ever, and blah blah blah. I don't know about all that. But
okay. I don't know about all that. Yeah. Okay.
So what are your thoughts on that?
So let's talk about it. So first of all,
I can't hardly
hear. Can you hear me now?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Oh, hold on.
Okay.
Because you kind of like sound low.
Oh. Okay. What about that? How about now? I haven't done anything.
I don't know. But go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me though?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, all right. Let me know if I faded it out or anything like that. But anyway, so when anybody, because you got a lot of people that are new to the comic book world, they're just getting into it, you know? They have been reading it all their lives, so they don't really know. So when you look at Marvel, let's just look at Marvel, okay? Mm-hmm. Everything that Marvel has created, you know, especially the characters, came from Jack King Kirby in the beginning, okay?
Yeah.
Jack King Kirby, that's a white man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like he said, he was chained to the boards. And Stan Lee wrote the scripts. Mm-hmm. Okay? Last time I checked, Stan Lee was white too. Okay? Mm-hmm. Black Panther started out, Black Panther had on a grass skirt, and Mubaka had on a grass skirt and a monkey thing on his head and all that other mess. Okay.
Yeah, it was called Cold Titan.
Yeah, I didn't really care for it as a kid because I didn't like how they had him looking till they got to like the early 80s and they let that one brother take over. I forget his name.
Christopher Priest.
Christopher Priest. And he put him in that bad black bodysuit and the black cape and I said,
Actually that came before. Actually when they first started, yes, he was more tribal.
Yes.
And Jack Kirby then had him in like a yellow and blue costume.
That ugly costume. Cold Tiger. And I didn't like that either.
So later, actually, it was Kirby's idea to change the. He did change it to the first black suit. Was Kirby's idea. Was
but
to change
Chris,
it to, the,
but
to the black suit. Yeah,
Priest.
And then Christopher Priest, when he took it over, he did some more designs and changed up the suit again. But yeah, Kirby did have the black suit because when he met the Fantastic Four, which is one of his first introductions in the black
suit. That's what they introduced,
yeah,
with the Fantastic Four.
And that was Kirby's idea. Kirby did that. He created the black suit, and that's what we saw him. But yeah, and then Priest took it over, and the thing I loved about it was that all the writers pretty much since then have been black.
But to my point, and to what you just validated, Jack King Kirby created the character in conjunction with Stan Lee. So no matter how much you write on it or how much, you know, it's still theirs. So I agree with Master P when he says that. Look, all the stuff that this money, all the money this movie's generating, it's going back into the coffers of Marvel. So don't get it twisted. So that's the first thing. So I think I see what you're saying when you're saying that it did create a lot of jobs. It did create a lot of opportunity because I worked on a lot of sets where it's a quote unquote black show.
Yeah.
I just saw one shot last year in Brooklyn. I'm not going to know the name of it. And I didn't see a black person on that set.
Wow.
But it's a quote unquote black show.
Wow.
Okay. All right. So that's that. But as far as creating jobs and creating opportunities and create, I really do think that people forget we already had a film industry. Already had a film industry. You know, Oscar Michaud, one of the pioneers of black film. We all know who that is. Melvin Van Peebles. We know who that is. We know who Max Julian is. We know who Gordon Parks is. We know Oscar Dixon.
Fred Williamson. All those guys.
We know Ossie Davis. They already blazed up.
Davis.
They blazed a path for us.
Matty Rich. Yeah,
Ivan Dixon, Bill Duke, they created a system for us, and it wasn't until we wanted to go mainstream that you had to start begging for bread. So I think we're getting back to that thing where, okay, people are seeing that our movies can be mainstream as well. You see what I'm saying? We're not relegated to the independent houses or to the black movie house like we used to have back in the day. People don't know that.
Yes.
But now we can be mainstream too. And I think a lot of people like we both agreeing on, like Master P is, you get it twisted. You think because it's a black character, it's a black no. I mean, yes, it is great black representation on the screen, and we love that. But behind the scenes, that money is going back to a non-black community. So
that's true.
That's why I say, you know, he can come out with he got the hookup, she got the hookup, and Tyler Perry can do what he's gonna do, whatever. I mean, it's all art, it's all cinema, whatever the case may be. If you don't like it, don't go see it. I don't. But.
Right.
That's how I feel about it. I'm not trying to sit up there and tap dance on nobody's opportunity because I don't want anybody doing it to me. But when you want to see black characters come on the screen like that in a huge way, I think we're still waiting for that black created character with black directors, black writers, a black cast, a black crew, and it coming back into black pockets. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
So I understand what Master P is saying. I understand what we're saying. And it's a little bit different, but it's also the same, you know. And I think until, you know, you can go ahead and you can make what you call a hood classic and this, but at some point, you know, movies are not just one thing. Art is not just one thing. Mm-hmm. We have the gamut. And that's okay. I think that's what people don't understand. Why do we always have to have one type of black movie?
Man,
12 years a slave.
Man.
This is, I'm so tired. Look, I don't want to see no woman nobody getting shot. Or no I don't want to see that. Our lives and our diasporas are so vast.
You just hit the nail on the head for me. I have been preaching that for so long as a writer, as a filmmaker.
Yes.
And I'm like, why are we just... Look, I tell people all the time. I said, I get upset with people and they get upset with me and I don't care. But I get upset is that, you know, we have relegated ourselves to the same
genre. Yes.
We do the drama.
Yes.
We do the rom-com.
Yes.
We do the biopic.
Yes.
We do the family ensemble film.
Yes. Yes.
And we do the comedy.
And that's okay? What happens. That's what happens when you have to go to somebody and ask permission to make what you want to make. When our forefathers back in the 70s, black exploitation, we had black monsters, we had black kung fu heroes. I mean, Jim Kelly kicked more ass than anybody. Hello.
Yep.
We had Cleopatra Jones and her. I mean, you know, we had black police movies, we had black revenge movies, we had black cowboy movies.
Yep.
And so
black horror movies, black horror movies,
everything. Yeah. We ran the gamut. We had black international films. That's when our brothers in Nigeria and Ghana started coming over and saying, "Hey, we got something to show y'all too."
Black Orpheus,
come on. And I think that we're finally getting around to getting back to that.
Yeah, we are.
And it is sad that people didn't realize we already had it. We didn't have to go looking anywhere else. All we had to do was build on the foundation that these people laid for us.
Yeah. And
that's all we had to do.
Debates, and I get in all these debates with people and I'm like, why can't we see bigger than that? And so some brothers was like, oh man, I'm so, well, look, man, we got too much going on in the hood. You know what I mean? We can't just be sitting up here talking about no niggas in spaceships and all that shit. We can't be doing all that. I said, yes, you can. I said, you can take any genre. I said, that's the great thing about genre. I said, that's the great thing about sci-fi, fantasy, and horror, is that you can interject anything that you want into those types of films. And so he didn't understand what I meant. I said, okay, look, I said, man, go back and look at the history of those films, of those genre films. Look at films like The Thing.
Yeah.
Do you think there wasn't a social commentary there? Look at films like Candyman.
Oh,
Candyman had a huge social commentary.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ex-slave jumping out of the mirror killing white folks.
Hello.
I mean, they had a lot of social commentary and horror. Wes Craven, all those guys back in the day. George Romero, he made a zombie movie where the black man was the hero until the end, and the Klan killed him at the end.
Sure did.
I said, you think he didn't have something to say with that film? And I said, you look at sci-fi films. You look at films like District 9. That's a film about a spaceship with alien slaves hovering over Johannesburg Chinatown.
Yeah.
You think he wasn't trying to say something with that film? I said, you can say whatever you want with genre films. You don't have to every film doesn't have to be the same thing. You don't have to make the hood film. You don't have to remake Boys in the Hood. You don't have to remake those other types of films.
Exactly.
You can do whatever you want within genre. I said, just make it interesting. Just make it interesting.
That's it. And I get into it with a lot of people with that too, because they say, well, I mean, who gonna buy something about a black chick with the powers of a supernova?
I say,
who wouldn't? Yeah. You telling me if you're getting shook down by some dirty cops, you wouldn't want a black star to come and blast one of them? Yeah. Is that what you're telling me? And that's another thing people don't realize, they forget. You know, movies are for you to go and escape.
Yes.
They're for you to go and sit somewhere in a nice theater for a couple of hours and go somewhere that you've never been before. And I guess I'm just a kid of the 80s, you know, with Never Ending Story and Dark Crystal and movies like that, you know, The Last Dragon and The Last Starfighter.
You
went somewhere that you had never been before. And when you left that movie, you felt like, I just got through seeing something, you know, like, wow. And I think people forget that element. They forget that it's called entertainment for a reason. You know, when I pay my $2 and some cents, I don't want to see a whole movie about somebody getting shot down. I can look on the news and see that. I can step outside and see that.
Right.
I can read the paper and see that. Right. That's not the only thing that happens in black people's lives. That's not the only thing that we are about.
Or if you do, and if you do those films, add something else to it to make it interesting. Different. Have you seen that movie See You Yesterday?
I did see it.
You know what I'm saying?
I
so you took you took the subject of police brutality.
You did.
Took the subject of black men dying at the hands of police.
You did.
You know, and you twisted it and added a sci-fi element to it and a time travel element to it, where the girl, you know, I'm not gonna spoil it for people, but it's a time travel movie about a girl who lost her brother and, you know, she's trying to save his life. You know what I'm saying? I'm not gonna tell you all that happened, but that's the basically crux of
that's
it. She tries to go back and save her brother with time travel. And so that takes a real
It puts a whole new element on it, and puts a whole new twist on it.
I say we can do that. Mm-hmm. They're addressing a social issue with science fiction.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, look what Spike Lee did with She's Gotta Have It. That movie came out in the 80s. I just got out of middle school, and it took him this long to bring it to the small screen. And I think it was well worth the wait, because I mean, he put his foot in it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's getting canceled.
And he's shopping it to Hulu and Amazon and some other people as we speak. And I'm hoping that they pick it up.
Yeah, which brings me to a last thing, and then we'll wrap up, is that watching films and TV shows like that, and She's Gotta Have It and Insecure and other shows like that, people and stuff. Mm-hmm. The thing that I find interesting is that when we talk about these types of shows, is that people are really, really stuck up or kind of stuffy about black sexuality.
Yeah.
And I like, we don't be humping. Like, we don't be
like we ain't been having sex. Like, we ain't been screwing since the dawn of time. How you think your ass got here?
Right. Why is black sexuality so taboo?
Well, and my thing is this, and anybody who knows me knows I care less. You know, I mean, that's your business. As long as you don't try to put it on me, I can care less. Everybody knows how I roll. But I mean, everybody has their own gist and taste of it, you know?
Right.
And do you.
Right.
Do you.
Right. Because a lot of people just really have issue with, y'all enjoy a show about a hoe. Basically, she just hoeing and sleeping with all these dudes. That's not really the gist of
the show. Let me ask you a question. Was Carrie and them hoes on Sex in the City?
Yes, they were then.
Okay.
But you never
heard that. Oh, they were so classy. They were so chic. They was a bunch of white hoes in the city doing what the fuck they thought they wanted to do, wearing them tacky ass clothes. And my thing is, what part of New York City you live in? Because I can't sit up there in a photo apartment just writing a bunch of crap.
Right.
You know? So I don't know what this question about you watching a show about hoes, I don't know what that has to do with anything, because if you are a young man or woman that's not married and you are out there dating and actively trying to, you know, find some, well, that's what you do.
You're going to be having a lot of sex.
You're going to be testing the goods. I know I am.
You'll be having a lot of sex.
You going to buy the car before you take a test drive?
Of course you might get
a lemon. Get it done, okay? And the same thing. Say same thing when it's come to test the finest, okay? I gotta test you.
Gotta see what's up, right?
So you got these. Hey, you got young people or middle aged people or whatever the heck they are, and they are out there just doing what, you know. And I don't understand how that makes you a hoe. I've heard the criticisms like about Issa Rae, you know, and I don't like them.
I don't either.
I think it's a very well written show. It's funny as hell. The characters are realistic, and it is what it is.
Yeah, I love the show. It's one of my favorite shows, and I encourage people who are interested in, you know, that path, because a lot of people, I hear a lot of people like, oh man, how did she do that? I said, well, if you don't know, Issa Rae first started doing a show called Awkward Black Girl.
Sure did.
And it was on YouTube, and it's kind of like Insecure, but just at a smaller scale with a smaller budget.
Real small budget,
but a funny show and a well-written show, and that's an example of somebody taking a web series idea and catapulting their career into something else. So content creators, web series work. If you build your audience, they will come. Like you
sure
said,
will.
Build it, they will come.
Sure
you know
will.
What I'm saying? So, man, I have had a blast with you on the show tonight. I thank you so much for being a guest tonight.
It's been so fun. So when my next projects come out, I'll make sure that you get a free digital copy and we can talk about the next one.
Thank you. So tell everybody can reach you on social media.
So if you want to reach me on Facebook, you can look at Sugar Lean Publications and I'll pop right up. On Instagram at Sugar Lean Pubs, Twitter at Sugar Lean Pubs. And if you want to look me up on the internet, it's www.sugarleanpubs.com. So my store will be up officially this week, actually. I think my engineer is kind of freaking out on me a little bit, but it'll be up and running. And hey, just hang with me, y'all, and keep supporting me. And I thank you so much for letting me speak.
No problem. Thank you so much for being on the show. And of course, I'm Hank Bird. This is the Big Blurred Cast. You can reach me, Hank Bird, on everything, the social media. And I'll be putting this episode up soon. And again, I thank you guys for tuning in. Everybody, have a great night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.